When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is my Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast where we begin talking about clothes, but sometimes get our knickers in a right old twist, quite literally. Those of you who heard last week's episode with Emma Barnett may remember our little discussion about whether or not one is meant to wear knickers under our pyjama bottoms. Emma said absolutely, and I was not so sure. Anyway, the question triggered a heated debate on Woman's Hour this morning and all over the national and international newspapers and social media. We went on to conduct our first ever My Ward Mal poll and found that 32% of sleepers wear knickers in PJs, while 68% go commando. So now we know. Can I just say that this is the kind of highbrow agenda-setting conversation you won't get anywhere else, not even on Desert Island Discs or More or Less, and certainly not in our time with Melvin Bragg. But enough about that, and on to today's special guest for episode 56, which is our season's finale. It's designer, entrepreneur, author of the fantastic new book If in Doubt, Wash Your Hair, and undisputed queen of handbags, Anya Heimach. So let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. So today, I'm speaking to one of my icons. And funnily enough, I don't have a single one of her handbags, Anya Heimach. And it is Anya Heimach. You are amazing, and you've brought out the most fabulous book, which has just come out and has been in the top 10 bestseller list in the Sunday Times for about 3 weeks, well, since it came out. Is that right?
I don't know the stats. We did make the Sunday Times bestseller list. I think we were number 9 out of 10, which is kind of good because I was always bottom of the class, so it felt rather appropriate. But yes, we made it. Kind of big moment.
I'm sure a lot of people have said this to you, but it is like having you next to me. You talk about in the book about how you love walking and how you go with one of your best friends and you do it 3 times a week and you walk for an hour and you do 10,000 steps, which I don't believe because I can't do that running. But anyway, and it's like all this amazing advice that you give and think that some of them are quite obvious, but at the same time, they're things that we never talk about or never discuss. And it's, you know, having read it on so many levels, I sort of felt less alone.
Good, good. Well, I mean, first of all, I think we, before we even delve into that though, but don't we have to just work out why you don't have one of my handbags? I mean, shame on you.
I don't know. I probably did. No, actually, you know what? I lie. I do have a gold one and it sort of looks a bit like a gold croissant.
Okay.
And it must be about 25 years old. And I do have that and I love it.
Okay. That you're forgiven then. Okay. in answer to your question, well, it's funny, isn't it? I wrote this book because I've done lots of talks to women in business and so on over the years. And it's interesting, at the end of the talk, people would come up to me and always ask me the question, you know, what's your best tip for a kind of busy working woman, busy working mum? And I would always rather laughingly say, you know, if in doubt, wash your hair. And I think the point is that actually you need to look after yourself, actually. I think that's the first thing. And I think also it has the word doubt in the title. And I think doubt is a really interesting subject, one that we're never terribly honest about, actually. So this book is very much talking about doubt from a sort of personal perspective, that the normal doubt that we all suffer, everyone from the prime minister to everyone, and how it sort of snaked its way through my life through the roles I have of mum and stepmom and woman in business and entrepreneur and you know, creative, and how actually I think we need to reframe doubt as a really positive thing. So I wanted to write it really honestly and to write it as if I was writing to my daughter or a girlfriend, just sharing the bits that I've worked out, the bits I haven't worked out, the bits that I've struggled with, the bits that I kind of now realise actually aren't that important, just to be honest, I think it's really important, isn't it? You get to 50 and you actually think, you know what, we need to start kind of passing this stuff on. Because certainly lots of advice I've had from friends over the years has really helped me. So if we can kind of all put it down together, hopefully that will help the next generation. So that's really the point of it. Was that your question? I think so, more or less.
That's absolutely perfect. But it's interesting you talk about doubt like that. Do you think, I mean, you say it's a positive thing. How do you see it as a positive thing? Is it a bit of a break so it makes you think before you leap?
Yeah, I think it keeps you safe. You know, if you're about to do something and that little gremlin on your shoulder is sort of saying, you know, don't mess up, or, you know, don't go, you know, don't be too long, or don't be late, or actually what that's doing is just checking you. And, you know, whilst that can, it can sometimes feel like it's undermining you or it might trip you up, actually it's there to keep you safe. So I think, you know, you learn that that little gremlin of doubt is on your shoulder to keep you safe, and you can actually adjust the volume and you can kind of go, it's okay, I've got this. So I think doubt is actually quite good at sort of making you the best version of yourself in many ways. And I think it's important to also know that everyone has it. I think that's the bit that no one's very honest about. And I think that the more, you know, we can all kind of go, yeah, we all suffer that, everyone. And I know everyone does, it's just a fact. I mean, if you didn't, it would be terrifying. So I think it's really about that, you know, that sort of sharing that piece of, single piece of important information, really, as much as anything.
You're so right. I think that, you know, women are, we're fed so much bullshit in terms of, I think, for me, one of the worst terms is you can have it all. And I really don't believe that. You've got to sacrifice things somewhere. But again, going back to your book, it's kind of in a gentle way, you do suggest that you can have it all. Do you really believe that?
I also talk about the fact that, you know, the Sister Angela example, where my first day at school in a convent, and Sister Angela said, and it was a generous piece of advice, she said, you know what, girls, I want to give you one really important bit of advice on your first day at school, which is, if you accept that you'll never be fully satisfied, you'll have a very happy life indeed. And actually, I think having it all is a difficult phrase. And I think that you're never fully happy, or very rarely moments of being, you know, really happy. But that's as good as it gets. And I think we need to reframe our expectations, because otherwise, I think that sometimes, you know, there's so much sort of pressure to feel that life should be perfect. Life isn't perfect. Life isn't always fair. It's navigating your way through those obstacles and challenges, and you know, hopefully coming out, you know, healthy and well and solvent, and working out what makes you happy. I think there's a lot of the expectations need to be reassessed, actually. So I think having it all is completely unrealistic and unlikely. And if that's your aim, then you're always going to be unhappy. So that's rethink it a bit.
Yeah, hopes high, expectations low. I think that's the thing. That's what the mantra I live my life by. But also another thing I loved that you said about, you know, how difficult you find it to engage in small talk. And yet, I've listened to you on, I know it's not so much small talk and it's one-on-one, but you're so eloquent. You know, you've been doing a lot of podcasts, and obviously you do a lot of talks and things, but you're so eloquent, and I'm surprised you find small talk difficult.
Well, thank you for that. I think that it's that inane chat. I mean, a meaty conversation I love. I'm just very bad at kind of cocktail party chat. I genuinely wish I was better at it, because I think it's a real skill. My husband, for example, is brilliant at it, and we'll chat to anyone about anything. I feel totally trapped and sort of scared that I'm boring people. It's not my skill set. But, you know, sit me down and have a deep conversation or a good sort of chat over dinner, I love. So it's just a little insecurity I have. I'm not very good at that sort of, you know, chat that doesn't, you know, my friend calls it tiny talk, you know, where you're just sort of getting nowhere. So I think that's, you know, that's who I am. And I don't have that skill, but some people do, and they're brilliant, and I wish they taught it at school, frankly.
Yeah, I wonder how useful it is today, because we've transferred that small talk onto our telephones in tech. So I've become very lazy at actually having conversations with people on the telephone. I'd much rather just wing a text. And I do sometimes feel that that's replaced the small talk that you'd have a do.
I don't know. I think in a funny way, text is, there's a reason. It's a, you know, what time are you arriving for me? Or, you know, it's often actually sort mm-hmm. of, you know, an important exchange of information. The tiny talk for me is when you're sort of standing around at some sort of cocktail party and you're not really sort of getting anywhere with anything. It's just sort of, I'm not very good at that sort of, that piece of it. I mean, I love a voice note now. That's my, it's one of my, my best ways. Actually, I find it exhausting writing a long text. It's just quite good to drop a voice note, which I think is always really good. But listen, everyone's different. I mean, I wish I was better at small talk. Maybe I'll just try a bit harder. go to tiny talk school.
No, you know, you, like you say, you can't be good, you know, you can't be good at everything. And the other thing I loved that you said was that, or someone else said, I can't remember the name of the, it was a man who said, the brain is for having ideas, not holding on to them. For me, that was a real light bulb moment when I read that.
It was when I heard it too. And I think that's the point, that I've tried to kind of gather lots of things that have made a difference to me. I'm fascinated by the nerdy subject of organisation, and I used to apologise for it, and now I actually fully embrace it. And funny enough, I think that's what handbags are. It is about organisation, really. It's about taking your things with you and having what you need and about being organised. And I think there's a real art in organisation, and you know, you don't have to be the complete fun tampon, as my children can refer to me sometimes when I'm quite organised. But like thanks. But you know, but actually being disorganised is uncomfortable. You know, that's when you're leaning on people at the last moment. Mm. And but there's also that idea, and it was great that this course that I did, where, and we actually had them to talk at in our stores over a few days, where they, you know, they suggest that your brain, and same with your inbox, they actually say interestingly, but your brain is for receiving ideas, which should immediately be put into a different place, so that you're not having to hang on to an idea, so you're not wasting your energy going, don't forget to buy that, don't forget to buy that on the way home, don't forget to buy that, because then you're thinking that and you're not actually receiving ideas in. So they train you to, yes, receive the idea, grab it, catch it, and store it somewhere. And they would argue on a list, which is it's quite a little complexity to their system. But actually, even if you take 10% of it, it's really game changing. So yes, I think that is right. Keep your head for ideas, and anything you need to remember, write that down. And the relief, even if you haven't done the task, that it's captured on a piece of paper and you won't forget it, is great. So I love those nerdy organizational tips.
I am the most disorganized person on the planet. And
really?
So for me, that was really helpful. Yeah, totally disorganized. But I'm organized on behalf of other people, but not for myself. But what I love, when you talk about the list making, and it's how you compartmentalize. So whether it's financial, whether it's something you can do now, it's in front of you, or whether it's something you're going to do at home because you are at home, and then on another list you put what you're going to do at work the next day. To me that was just so useful.
But it makes sense, doesn't it? And that we've completely learned that from them. But it makes sense, because actually there's no point staring at a list at work and filtering through actions you can only do at home, because that basically wastes time. So if you've got actions you can just, they talk about sort of place specific action lists, and or it can be people specific action lists. So things I need to talk to my husband about, or things I need to talk to my head of production about, for example. So that can work quite well. I mean, it gets incredibly sophisticated, the system they teach, and actually I haven't been able to adopt all of it, because it's sort of, in a way, I think I'm so set with my sort of muscle memory of how I do things that, in a funny way, it's quite hard to shift. I actually think they should teach this, you know, the best practice organization at school. And the reason I actually found these people called Next Action Associates is because actually my son, who is a lawyer, who in his first week of training at Freshfields, he was given best practice inbox management. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I'd love to kind of know more about that. And these people came in and talked him through, you know, for example, when an email comes in, you should never leave it in your inbox. It should go immediately to, you know, it might be a to-do at your phone or to-do tomorrow. Or, you know, there's a lovely example where, you know, you might have ordered something for delivery and you'll receive the kind of confirmation. You don't want to bin it in case it doesn't arrive. So it clogs up your inbox. So this is such a nerdy chat, but I'm loving this. So they suggest that you have a sort of deliveries sort of file on the left and you shove them all in there. So if it doesn't arrive, you've got it, but it doesn't clog up your inbox. There's little tiny tips like that. It's another tip I loved, which is about getting things done, which is if you have that thing on your to-do list, which you just keep getting blocked on. So for example, there's a broken lamp and, you know, you're just somehow still sitting there. You used to keep looking on your list and it's still sitting in the hall. And they say, break it down into tasks. So actually, what's the next action? And the next action is actually ring the electrician or try a new bulb. So break it down into tasks, which is then you're much more unlikely to unblock it and to move it on. So anyway, oh, the fashion life I lead, hey, with all these exciting tips on light bulbs. But, you know, it's a really interesting subject.
The other thing that I loved is about your take on emotional intelligence. And I mean, I completely agree. I think that's the most valuable thing you can have, especially today where the world is so small and, you know, there's such a kind of desire to be so highly educated. And I think that sets people apart. And I don't think it's something you can learn. But also, I'm interested that you are obviously someone who is highly emotionally intelligent, but I never put emotional intelligence with being organized.
Okay.
So how are you able to be emotionally intelligent and organized? That's a very selfish question that I'm asking.
I think the two things are entirely different. So, I mean, the dream for me would be to have IQ and EQ. You know, I'd love to be, you know, to have both of those. I don't think EQ is you know, sort of is repels or conflicts at all with organization. I think that organization to a certain extent is a discipline actually. And I think it's about, you know, it's planning ahead and it's you know, making sure you're sort of scanning the diary. When I do really boring things, so I always work on a Sunday afternoon and I just sort of scan the weeks ahead and just kind of, you can see problems coming up, you can kind of solve them then, you kind of get all the presents done, you kind of run through the emails you didn't deal with last week, so you sort of start Monday like afresh. And so it's about, sometimes about discipline. And actually I think those habits are really interesting. I'm fascinated by the subject of habits actually, and how you change your habits and make habits. Because actually if you can adopt some of those habits, and I've had to adopt habits, it can make life easier. So, but I don't think it's to do with EQ, but I do think EQ is hugely important. And I think we all see, don't we, in certainly in work situations, but in all situations, the fact that, you know, people who can be highly clever, but they can be clumsy maybe with, you know, managing people or, you know, being sort of sympathetic or you know, open to the way other people work. And it becomes, if people are, you know, not, if they don't have an element of EQ, I think then you often tend to sort of either have to sort of do a bypass and work around the sort of the around things, or often it doesn't work out. So no, EQ is pretty imperative, I think, in a work situation. So I would always pick EQ if I had to choose, but I'd love both in an ideal world.
And talking about habits, one of your habits is to have major wardrobe clear outs. Isn't that right? How do you go about clearing and organizing your wardrobe?
Well, I think the reason I do it is it just makes life easier again. So there's nothing worse than going into your wardrobe and it's hot outside and all you've got is winter coats, because again, it's a bit like the emails, you're just sifting through things that, you know, just waste time. And I think that someone once taught me that actually if you, you know, maybe every 6 months or every 4 months, you just actually put all the right clothes that are kind of weather specific sort of in front of your nose as opposed to the ones that aren't. And actually you go through your wardrobe and work out outfits. And actually there's someone explained that if you you work out an outfit, you get it, you put it together with the shoes, every single aspect of it, and photograph it, keep it in your phone and have an album called Outfits. Then actually when you're thinking, what can I wear to a board meeting next day, what can I wear to some event or whatever it might be, you can flick through those sort of ready-made ones that work and pick what you want to wear, as opposed to sort of start again and actually, you know, be sitting on the bedroom floor having a sort of nightmare about not being able to find the right things.
Meltdown.
Exactly. It does sort of help. So I think all those sort of planning tips are just, you know, just practically useful. And that's how they work in, you know, very much in fashion. It's organized. And so for me, for a business trip, you know, all of us on a holiday, the fact that you've actually kind of worked out the outfits and you're not taking unnecessary things and you've kind of got it down pat just makes life easier, really. I think also just, you know, it's important when you're busy, you just need to have these things all done and dusted.
That's so right. When we were, Trini and I were working, you know, working abroad, and like we'd be away from home for a month and filming every day for a month. And it would be exactly that, is working out every single outfit with the shoes, the jewellery, everything, and then putting them in a little clothing bag and packing it. And life was so easy then, and I need to readopt that principle because it is so useful rather than everything being chucked.
It's an effort. I think sometimes it's quite good to, you know, I mean, the dream is you have someone who does that for you. And when you do it professionally, then it sort of, it makes sense to have, you know, people will have a stylist who'll come in and they don't just style, but they also help you organize all of that. But I think, you know, you can do it with a friend as well. And actually you can be each other's sort of tag team. And actually you go in and kind of go, you're not wearing that, that doesn't look good. And you actually sort of, you know, you do it for each other. And sometimes just putting the effort in, and it feels like it's a silly thing, because in some ways it is, but actually it takes a lot of headspace, all that stuff. none of which we will have time for often. So it actually, again, it's about being organized, isn't it, really? Back to the same old subject, aren't we? My goodness.
No, but it's so true, because I think, and you know, being organized does simplify your life. And certainly, you know, as we get older, speaking for myself, but you want your life to become more simple. And by being organized, you know, whether you're still running a huge business like you are, or you're writing like I am, it's like, it's just the simple things. And by being organized, you have to, you they free you up to do the simple things that give you pleasure.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's absolutely right. And I think in some ways, COVID is so horrible, and you know, it's nothing good at all from COVID, and so many horrible, tough stories. But I think that actually for a lot of us also, that idea of not having to be so busy and just taking quite a lot of those sort of pressures away, there was a joy in that in some respects. And so I think we all need to learn from that, really. It's important.
So going back to your childhood, Anya, you were to a convent in Essex. And how old were you when you started getting an interest in fashion clothing? Or was that something that evolved with your bags?
Well, I think I always loved, actually, craftsmanship actually was my sort of starting point more than fashion. And I always used to make things. And that was, you know, interesting to me. But when I was about 14 or 15, my mother gave me one of her secondhand handbags. And I remember how it made me feel. And I think that's the bit that's really interesting in fashion. It's how mood changing it can be, and how it can make you feel a bit sort of empowered, and you sort of stand a bit straighter and sort of smile with your eyes. And that's the bit that interests me, actually. The sort of fashion for fashion's sake is not so interesting. I think fashion, when it's just about status and look at me, I've got this new expensive thing, that's not interesting either. Mm. And actually, more and more, I care about two things. One is the empowerment of how you feel, because that's, you know, it's self-expression and it's all those important things. But also fashion with purpose, actually, is what I care about. You know, why are you buying something? What's it doing? Is it making you feel great? That's great. That's reason enough. But, you know, is it making a difference? Is it, you know, recycling materials? Is it donating to a project or a charity or an idea? So I think that fashion started with craftsmanship, but has really sort of actually grown into a bit of a passion for using the platform of fashion in a way to, you know, if it sounds grandiose, but to affect change in some ways, because fashion does really, it does communicate in a very noisy way. You know, when we did the I'm a Plastic Bag project, you know, it was using that platform to actually, you know, try to persuade people to behave differently. And, you know, if you think that fashion persuades people to go from, you know, cigarette pants to, you know, to flares, you know, it can absolutely make you behave very differently. You know, it's very viral. Suddenly everyone will be wearing the same thing because of fashion. So it's very sort of persuasive industry. And so I think using that in a way for good is quite exciting.
I mean, that must be, you know, again, from your book, it seems to be that that's one of your, as much your priority now as it is designing bags. And of course, your The Village, which is such an inspired idea. Tell me more about that, The Village.
Well, The Village has been a sort of passion project for about 2 years now. And it's funny because I think, you know, in this time when we've got, you know, 10 years to fix our planet, which is pretty terrifying. And, you know, we're all trying to work out what feels right for this next sort of important chapter. And the word globalization has sort of been the backdrop to my entire career. You know, it's all been about global supply chains and global distribution and global everything. And actually, I think the next 10 years is going to be more about localization, actually. And you know, people coming together as communities. I think we saw that in COVID. I think that's actually really satisfying. I think the idea of jumping on a plane to Tokyo for 3 days, which I've done more times than I care to admit to, is going to feel actually really, you know, wrong. Well, it is wrong, really, in terms of carbon footprint. So I wanted to open this little village, which also responded, I think, to the changes in retail and sort of bricks and mortar retail versus, you know, the sort of the new digital world. You know, what is the point of having a shop if it doesn't offer something different from what you can get online? So I sort of felt I actually wanted to reduce footprint of shops, which was about 60 stores, and to not have stores in Singapore and Malaysia and New York and LA and all over the world, because in a funny way that didn't feel terribly authentic. I felt I wanted to actually reach the world digitally and occasionally with pop-ups and events and fun things, but to actually make the physical world smaller but really authentic, where I was very involved and there changing the windows every day and meeting my customers, and there's a cafe, and we've got all these, it's in a way an excuse to pour all of our creativity into this little village, which, you know, perhaps is a bit of a replacement for us for sort of Fashion Week in some senses as well, because it's more direct to our customers as opposed to the industry. So it sort of addressed a number of things for me, changes with the digital versus the physical, changes in terms of Fashion Week perhaps versus actually direct to consumer, and actually this idea of authenticity and creativity being something that I think is still really relevant in a sort of physical form. I also mostly just do things through gut, to be honest. I often think about them afterwards as to why. You have to kind of, I think entrepreneurs respond to kind of what they feel more than what they think, mostly, certainly initially. So we opened, in answer to your question, we opened this little, what we call a village in Pont Street, which is the home of my first ever store. And we opened sort of most of the shops in the street, so with a sort of collection of five little stores both sides of the road, with a little cafe there, the Anya Cafe, which is like an English cafe, but in a really gorgeous way with really amazing ingredients, and it's sort of, it's quite fun. And we've got what we call the Village Hall, which is one of the stores, is forever changing. So we opened it for its launch as a pop-up hair salon, which we called Shampoo and Therapy, because we sort of felt post lockdown, everyone just needed to meet with their girlfriends, have a delicious cocktail or a cup of coffee, and actually have a head. It was just, you know, it was fun. It's what I wanted to do myself. So that space will change sort of every 6 weeks with new concepts. And it actually allows us to design in a different way. We're designing not to seasons and dates. We're designing to what we're feeling and what we're excited by. So it's changed the whole kind of cadence of our business, actually. So it's a number of things that we've addressed, but it's really fun. I love it. I've been there most of the morning, and it's just fun hanging out with like my village people or my gang there, which is lovely, but also with the customers and just chatting and getting that feedback as well. And eating too much cake, probably. It's the only problem. Too many cocktails.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're so right. I think, you know, communities, especially in the countryside, I live in Sussex and grew up in the countryside. And as we all know, you just see communities breaking down all around you. And it is finding things to garner the community and to help the next generation who basically just want to piss off because there's nothing for them here. And I wonder, is this a model that you want to roll out, or maybe if you don't want to do it personally, you know, under your own name, that you'll try and get other retailers to adopt?
To be honest, I don't want to roll it out, because in a funny way, the whole point is it's just that, and it's really authentic. And so I rolled out stores before, and this is my anti-rollout in a funny way. Just, I want this to be authentic and where I really am every day. It's two streets away from where I live. You know, it's where I am. I think, though, that the community piece is really important. I think we've all realised that actually community is a sort of natural social service, isn't it? You know, it's been very sweet in my street here you know, the sort of local WhatsApp group, which is a new thing since sort of COVID. You know, if someone needs their medicine collected and they've got a bad hip, then one of us will go and do it. Or it's almost too much. We're now celebrating every birthday in the street. You know, like, whoa, guys, calm down. I've already got five children. But, you know, it's lovely. It's so lovely. And honestly, I think that, you know, where there are a moment, which will be loads of weddings and, gosh, funerals, used to say what, but I think that the outpouring of the street and the commitment now to this community is really important. So I think we've all relearned community, actually, and that again, that localization piece. You know, villages were for a reason, weren't they? They're about safety. They're about, you know, looking after each other. They're about meeting your future husband. They're about sharing food in the tough times. They're, You know, there's loads of reasons for villages. It's a very natural source of protection, really. So I think that we've sort of got to this lovely kind of global, travelling, independent world, but actually probably that structure of a community and of a village is and of local is really important to being happy, actually. So I don't know, I haven't sort of thought through too much, but I definitely sort of, there's definitely some things that have sort of become quite clear to me during this time. And actually, I also think the other thing that's interesting is cities are inevitably going to empty out a bit because, you know, so many kids, you know, can't afford to get on the property ladder in London, and yet they need to be in London for work. Now with this more flexible remote working, which I think and hope is here to stay, because it's mad that everyone's on this, you know, the bus together at, you know, or the train together at 9 a.m. That's just, what's the point? And actually, if they can work flexibly or remotely, then actually it allows people perhaps to live a bit further out. And then those communities start again. And I'm seeing this in my kids' friends who are starting to kind of go, actually, let's live in Bath. You know, what about Brighton? Actually, let's go to the countryside. And then actually you get all these little communities of people even working together, but reporting into different companies, but based out in, you know, I don't know, Somerset. And if they need to come in 3 days a week to London, that's 2 nights in London staying with friends. And actually they're living more out than in. So it's, you know, at times when people need nice working offices rather than sharing 3 Zoom calls with their flatmates at the same kitchen table, which is not very possible. So it's all going to change. And I think this community piece is really important and quite exciting, actually. They're quite significant changes.
I think you're right. And I really hope it is the case, because it's, you know, the countryside is, it's dying. But what I love is the fact that you've kind of given it, there's a resurgence which has started in Pont Street, you know, in the heart of London, ironically. And it's something that needs to be going on in rural areas, but you're the person who's given it that platform again. And I really salute you for that. I think from that perspective, you know, aside from being, you know, wonderful place to go and meet your friends and everything, I think it's going to be hugely impactful on.
Well, it's interesting. Well, I think it's right. And I think so many empty units, and it breaks my heart literally looking at you, any high street or any street in London right now. There's literally so many empty units. But I think I'm a terribly positive person though, because I think to a certain extent, a lot of those businesses were probably a bit threatened by the sort of digital world. So therefore they probably needed to, it's what I felt, you know, 2 years ago when we sort of looked at the business and thought, actually, this is no longer a particularly modern way to operate. You can't, you know, when things change, and things do change, you know, when you go from cart horses to cars or from swords to machine guns, you're not going to go back. You know, and those are exciting changes, actually. And I'm not sure about the machine guns, but they're sort of progress to a certain extent. So we have to accept that. And I think if you cling on to what was old, you know, you're playing the violin on the Titanic, aren't you? A bit. We need to move on. So I think a lot of casualties, whilst tragic and costing jobs, which is heartbreaking, but they probably were going to go anyway at some point. So it sort of expedited that situation. And I hope and believe, actually, that what will happen is, you know, who is a creative in London or someone with an idea wouldn't love to take an empty shop somewhere in London, perhaps at a slightly reduced rent because landlords are, you know, thinking differently these days. And it will regenerate in a really exciting way with new ideas that are more appropriate for the next, you know, 20 years. So I think it'll happen incredibly quickly. And I think actually villages and the countryside, but same thing will happen there.
It's kind of putting people in a position to think creatively and to come up with ideas. And you know, here again, it's like seeing stores that have been known to be only been London centric and now moving out to the more rural areas and employing local people. And I do agree. I think it's, you know, it's a very positive move. But we've gone so far off clothes, Anya, which is hilarious. No, it's not. I'm just fascinated by you know, your thought process and how it's so much bigger than your bags. I mean, your bags are iconic and they've been worn by everybody from the Princess of Wales to Kim Kardashian. So you're an innovator. You are an innovator. And I hope you see that about yourself, because you do come across as a very modest person.
I don't know. I think creativity is really important. And I think creative ideas are, you know, what will solve many of our challenges, I think. I think if we think about the challenges we have with our planet, I'm sure, you know, we need to change the way we behave. We need to use less carbon. We need to offset and come up with different solutions. We need to you know, but I'm sure there will be a creative solution that will add into the mix when we're going to need one. So I'm such a believer in creativity. And I suppose creativity for me is sort of as important, more important probably than fashion. Fashion is a is almost a byproduct and is a form of self-expression and an art form in many ways. But I think that I love being creative. I feel lucky that I'm in the most creative city in the world, I think, you know, with some of the best creative education. And I think that some of the sort of the, it's a very fertile sort of legal structure and breeding ground for crazy ideas. And some of the ideas we've had, from floating 29 giant, you know, double-decker bus-sized helium heart-shaped balloons over the city, are welcomed because people are like, great, let's do it, you know, and that's so exciting. And I think one idea leads to another idea, and hopefully everyone inspires everyone. It's sort of a melting pot of mad creativity. So bring it on, really. That's what's going to solve problems, I think.
Bring it on, indeed. And you, are you, so now you're not travelling so much, and it must be quite a relief for you, because A, you know, obviously the terrible jet lag, but I did read your solution to jet lag about taking half a sleeping pill at 4 o'clock in the morning at that terrible time when you wake up completely alert, but you need to carry on sleeping. But do you find, I mean, you talk about very openly about the panic attacks that you've suffered. Has this sort of change in pace, I'm assuming you have a slight change in pace, especially in terms of travelling, has that helped with your levels of anxiety?
Well, so I don't know if it was much panic attacks, but I used to have a sort of terrible, I used to do a bit of hyperventilation, so I don't know words today, it's Friday. And that was be like a sort of stress response to just, you know, just having too much on, I think, probably. And finding ways to sort of manage that. And I think everyone has their version of that, which, you know, might be, you know, I don't know, there's loads of different sort of versions of just being, I suppose it is anxiety, absolutely. And I think that, yes, being less, you know, trying to fit less in, and I think to a certain extent, COVID has made us sort of more grounded. We haven't, you're not mixing in the jet lag and the prep for all those trips and the, you know, and so on is certainly helpful. I don't seem to be any less busy, I'll be honest, we've been so busy. Yeah, I have enjoyed a slightly more sort of anchored period, absolutely, and I feel guilty talking about nice things that have come out of COVID, because I know for so many people it's been so awful. But I think actually a lot of people have probably had some benefits, I'm sure. So yes, I think that it's made me understand that actually probably just sort of slightly pulling back. I mean, for example, I would so often be asked to go and, you know, meet someone who might be a customer or a friend, and I would go meet them, and, you know, you'd go there and you'd arrive and you'd find the table and you'd say hi and you'd go through the sort of preamble, and actually you realise by the time you finish your coffee what they really want is, you know, work experience for a daughter, and that's all fine and great, but that's an hour or hour and a half out of your day, whereas actually now you can Zoom with someone and kind of go, great, you know, what do you want, let me make it happen, hopefully. So I think that, you know, there are ways now where we can actually think that certain things can be done without, you know, schlepping somewhere. You lose that time, you lose that the cost, you lose the you know, the energy, both, you know, to the planet and to us. So I think and hope that there will be some things that we all stick with through this. And to a certain extent, they've been in place for so long now that, you know, it is second nature to most of us to jump on a Zoom call, or, you know, it's amazing. I've done so many sort of, you know, I did Amanpour show, you know, but from my kitchen table. It was a pretty high tech sort of, you know, sort of situation. But literally, I was like, whoa, you know, and they're sort of counting you down. It says, you know, we've all learnt to do things that we would never have done. So I think that actually some really good stuff that's that we will keep and stick with through this. And certainly I would very much like that. I mean, I'm working from home today, and that's, you know, that's fantastic. I mean, I'm working absolutely back to back, but I know that my child's downstairs, and, you know, it meant I had a sandwich with him at lunch, and that was actually important. So I really hope that we keep, you know, even if it's 10%, 20% of what we've, of some of the changes.
When you were travelling and with your, you know, your, I guess, anxiety / fear, did you ever have, or do you have a comfort blanket, something that isn't a handbag, something that, you know, makes you feel safer, that you take with you everywhere?
I love a list. How sad is that? But I like that thing where...
Oh, my God.
No, no, no. Okay, but hear me out. Hear me out. I know, hear me out. My point is, I like sometimes listing things I want to do with the kids. That might be the seven wonders of the world, or it might be that I want to plan a, you know... Last night was my son's, he just finished school, like what I want to do. So it's like sort of in a way that a pen and a pencil, I suppose, is my comfort blanket, because I love that idea of writing down things I want to do and then sort of, you know, making them hopefully happen. So there'll be that. What else is my comfort blanket? I mean, God, so many things.
That's good. Comfort blanket. Yeah, that's good. Something you can't live without. I think that's, you know, and that's something that I can imagine does make you feel safe, because you've got chaos going on around you. At least you've got your list.
That makes me sound so sad. Don't pull that out. It's just one of those headline
quotes. Slightly sad.
Anya's comfort blanket is a list. It's more that I can, you know, anyway, I'm not even going to defend it. I am a loser. I'm in a total loser. Whatever. I've made peace
with
that.
Why should you? I think it's brilliant. And my love, have you ever stopped anyone who's been carrying your handbags in public and sort of said, God, it's so nice to see you carrying one of my bags?
I have, actually. It's always a bit disconcerting, I think, for the person that you do it to, because I think they first of all think you're about to steal their handbag, and secondly, they think you're a bit of a weirdo. But I have, because it is really exciting, of course. When you work on something from concept to drawing to sample to second sample, third sample, make it into the materials, and then you make it and you deliver it, to actually see it then being enjoyed and worn, hopefully as you had sort of envisaged it, is actually really lovely. And that's the joy of making things, you know, it's so nice. So I have, yes, but I think mostly they think I'm a bit of an oddball.
I mean, I know you have your big holdalls, and we all need a holdall, especially when we're travelling. But with phones, where we've got everything on our phone, whether it's, you know, we can pay by our phones, we can record on our phones, we can watch television on our phones, we can listen to the radio on our phones. Do you think bags are going to get smaller and smaller?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the phone is the most genius thing, because it's, you know, as you say, it's your photograph album, your diary, all the things that were separate items in your handbag. And how great. I love being hands-free. It's my absolute joy. In fact, one of the things we did is a project called Pimp Your Phone, which is where, you know, it comes with a case with the little D-rings on the side, and you can wear your phone. So it's just so easy to grab, and it, you know, it's lovely to be hands-free. But also, I mean, one of our best-selling pieces during lockdown was actually something called the Everything Pouch, which you can slide your phone into. You can actually use through, it's a transparent TPU. It's a type of material that actually is biodegrades, but actually you can use the phone through it and write a message and so on, and it has a space for your glasses and your keys, and it's just, everything's like the guts of your handbag. So if you're going out of the house, that's all you need. If you're walking the dog, and you're hands free, and it's bliss, you know, and you feel it's liberating, and you can march around the park. So those things, I think we will rethink, and to a certain extent, fashion is all about reflecting our needs and what we need to move around. I think the way we travel, a lot of people are cycling, you know, a lot of people are thinking about how they move around cities and so on. So, you know, bags will reflect that 100%.
Mm. I mean, when I go to London, I take a bag, but I don't think I've carried a bag on a day-to-day basis for 15 years now. But I am. What's it called, that bag? I'm literally going to go online after this. What's it called?
The Everything Pouch. And by the way, literally, it comes in, Everything Pouch.
Is it sold out?
It probably is, but we're getting more in. I'll let you know, because it comes in, it sells out, comes in, sells out. And it's part of what we call our label collection, which is literally where, I mean, I actually, you know what, my comfort blanket, I'm going to change it. I'm taking away the loser list message.
Okay.
It would be a labelling machine, which makes me only more loserville, because I would label everything in my life, including my children, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, everything. I love it. I feel so completely in control when most of my life is out of control. And so it's a label collection, which is this series of kind of, I suppose, wash bags in a way. It's like a system, and everything has a... We've just designed one called the Home Office, which, I don't know, most of us are moving from room to room or between office and home. And it's all those things you have in the top drawer of your desk, you know, from the sort of paperclip to the, you know, and it's that. And so you just have it and you open it, and it's effectively like your top drawer, but just on top of your desk, and you can zip it up and take it wherever you are. So
it's all
those delicious things, right?
I'm going to be dropping a fortune with you very, very soon. This is making me so excited listening to this.
You're sadder than me.
The two things, I'm now going to invest in those. I'm now literally, you're changing me. But for me, it's glasses, which you have a pair of very standout glasses, and as do I. Glasses, and now this, the Home Office and the Everything Pouch. I mean, This is going to change my life, because it's so well thought out. But Anya, I've never seen you, I don't think, or a photograph of you kind of in a, like a ball gown. You dress in quite an androgynous way, which I love and I wish that I could do, but my boobs get in the way and I just look pregnant. But how would you say your style is?
Well, I'm not very good at the sort of ta-da moments. I don't like that. I don't like being noticed for my clothes first. And in fact, I'm actually quite a shy person. I'm not very good at that. But I that's why I like accessories, because they're a sort of small, nice kind of nod towards what interests you. It's almost, we always talk about conversational clutches, you know, those little pieces of art that are kind of fun that show who you are. But I don't always want to. I'd rather be sort of noticed slowly and then hopefully appreciated, as opposed to she's arrived in the room, you know, and I always admire people who can do that big ball gown thing. It's not very me. So you kind of work out what's you after a while. You know when you feel comfortable, and you sort of those when you put on those outfits and you're sort of slightly kind of not, you know, you're sort of not happy versus those outfits you put on, and you forget that you're wearing them, but you just feel the best version of yourself. And that's, I think, what clothes should do, really. So ultimately, by 53, you've kind of worked out your style, haven't you, more or less, hopefully?
I'm still trying to work it out, to be honest.
Rubbish.
But Anya, have you ever had a wardrobe malfunction, or are you just simply too anal to have had a wardrobe malfunction?
No, I'm definitely loads. I mean, you know, I think for me the thing that's important is actually comfort. I think there's nothing worse than feeling or seeing someone who's wearing something that's being worn by the outfit, or you know, you can see it's pinching, or it's uncomfortable, or they're having to hold their tummy in, and just not, the whole thing's an effort. I hate effort clothes. And for me, funny enough, I love occasionally wearing heels, but not all the time. And I hate that thing when you're sort of tottering, but I particularly hate that thing. And there was one evening in Paris when I had a very beautiful pair of new shoes, and we were doing some big launch at Colette, that amazing store in Paris. And it was like standing on a knife, literally. It was absolute agony, and if that doesn't show in your face, and they just were really badly made. They were just, you know, it was really painful. And actually, I remember literally walking through Paris, having taken them off, and thinking, "To hell with it, I'm going to walk at my bare feet on the way home." But that's unfun, isn't it? And I think that actually, there's nothing less cool than being sort of worn by clothes that aren't comfortable or you don't feel yourself in. So yeah, uncomfortable heels.
I couldn't agree more. I can't even stand in a pair of heels now, let alone walk in them.
Yeah, the worrying thing about heels is they were developed, apparently, because men were attracted to women looking vulnerable and sort of tottering and sort of therefore... And that's quite dark, isn't it, when you think about it? I know they do elongate an ankle and a leg, which is quite elegant, but we've all been sort of brainwashed into that in a way. And actually, I think once, you know, the joy of putting on a sort of really cool pair of trainers and being able to race around the office all day and get stuff done... and not thinking, I won't walk home because actually I'm you know, in heels. It's a shame, really. So I don't know. I mean, they're beautiful. And I love them. I love them as things, as a bit of craftsmanship. But I think we need to make sure that they're fit for purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. And then final-ish question, Anya, birthday suit. Is there any kind of one outfit that you... Okay, you're kind of at a loss. I don't know what the hell I'm going to wear. I've got to go and do X. I'm feeling insecure. I'm having one of my moments. I'm going to wear... What would that be?
It's so clear to me. I have a beautiful Aussie Clark dress, which was probably made therefore in the 60s, which I bought secondhand. It was quite expensive, actually, because it's a sort of design classic. It's incredibly simple, but it's beautifully cut. Every time I put it on, I feel completely me and I feel completely great. And I always have a great time. And actually, I think it's going to be really important going forward that we have a sort of badge of honour for outfits that we've worn, you know, 100 times. We should all be going, this is my 98th time I've worn this dress, because actually that's completely appropriate. And that is my dress, and that's my go-to if ever I need that sort of confidence boost, or, you know, it just makes it, it's just me, that dress. But I'm also super proud of the fact that I have mended it already and will keep mending it. And it was already secondhand, and I hope that beyond me it'll go back into circulation and be loved again. So that would be my piece, and I'm really glad that it's also old.
What colour is the dress?
Black, actually. But I've actually got the exact same dress in a mint green. I have two of them, and I love them to death. I'd like to be buried in them, actually.
So nice.
So say that I love my children. Can I be buried in my Aussie Clark dress, please?
Okay, well, we'll take note of that.
Thank you.
And then we've had this kind of weird... I interviewed Emma Barnett, she does Woman's Hour now and Newsnight. She's fantastic. We just made this throwaway comment about... We were talking about pyjamas, and she said that she wore knickers under her pyjamas. And I was like, what? Why the hell do you wear knickers? Anyway, it's now this sort of thing that's gone viral. And I was wondering if you're a knicker person or a no-knicker person under your pyjamas.
I'm a definite no-knicker person. Sorry, Emma, I'm not in her camp. I'd like to be in Emma's camp on that front, but no. Sorry to let you down, Emma.
Yes, same. All right, my love. Well, listen, Anya, I really appreciate your time, and congratulations with everything. The village is, I'm yet to get down there. I haven't been to London for so long, but it's such a wonderful concept, and I wish you all the luck with your book, and may it stay in the top 10. If in doubt, wash your hair. I'm going to take your advice because I haven't washed my hair for months.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you, Anya. You can find the absolutely wonderful If in Doubt, Wash Your Hair in bookshops on and offline right now. Okay, before we go, we'd love hearing from you. And it's so easy to drop us a line by emailing us at help@mywardmail.com. Who do you think would make a great guest in a future episode? What could we be doing better? Or are we just perfect as we are? Do let us know. You can also find us at mywardmail.com. Follow us at mywardmail, and it would make us so happy if you kindly subscribe, rate and review us on your chosen podcast platform. While you're at it, please check out our Heavenly House band duo at duoguitarmusic.com or at duoguitarmusic on their socials. Well, that's it for season 7. Thank you so much to Anya and all our glorious guests and duo. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Catch up soon. Have a great summer. And until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.